Right, welcome back to the Jetstream podcast. We're now sitting with Robbie Middleby, CEO of the Newcastle Jets, and Jared Johnson, the commercial director for Hunter Sports Group. Thank you very much, guys, for agreeing to have a chat with us.
Thanks, Grant.
Thanks for having us.
How have we found the off-season so far?
Oh, it's been good. We've introduced a lot of new players to Newcastle, and they've been working hard, and it's a situation where we're excited about the season start. There's still a lot of time to go, and we're all waiting for October to kick off because the young players that we've got in the squad at the moment are flying.
How's the off season been for HSG?
Yeah, it's been a different one, and probably one we won't experience again. So that's like always, there's good learnings, and I think outside of the obvious with the license issue, just the learnings of the Jets, the culture, the people, it's been good. It's been really good. We've been able to strengthen our commercial team off the field, and I think really everyone's really looking exciting to the start of the season. Our membership's got off to a great start, so we're over, I think it was 2,300 today inside of a week, so that's a really pleasing result, and as we head towards that 11,000 mark, so everyone at HSG is really looking forward to the start of the season.
Cool. All right, well, we've got a bunch of questions that have been drafted and also submitted by newcastlefootball.net. people, and also a couple on Twitter. So we'll jump straight into them. First off, what's the situation with the kit supplier? Is ISC's contract up? Are we continuing with them? If not, who else are we looking at?
Yeah, so we're committed to ISC now for 3 years. That's across both the Knights and the Jets, so we're really pleased with that. I know that ISC and Hart have terminated their partnership, but we're really pleased with ISC. And more importantly, they've been really pleased with us. So I know last time we spoke for the podcast that there hadn't been a lot of interest in regards to the Jets and a kit supplier wanting to take on, but I also been really thrilled with the amount that we're producing, the range we've produced, and more importantly how our fans have responded to it. So it's a really exciting partnership, and I think if you look at IC across all the teams they do, they're a great partner to have, and certainly don't provide that off the shelf range that perhaps the bigger ones would.
And you mentioned before that our sales have been really strong, even compared to NRL clubs.
Yeah, our sales are really strong. So, with an NRL background myself, before I came here, knowing what clubs would turn out, I'm confident to say the Jets would finish definitely inside probably the top six to eight clubs in the NRL for turnover, which is a great result out of a 16-team comp. So, our fans responded really well to the change of colours, the change of designs, the new kit manufacturers, and that's a really remarkable result considering we weren't able to land our gear till December, so the fans had to go and members had to go probably 2 months without being able to get their hands on those jerseys. But it was a great year merchandise wise, and of course we built the sports store as well. So for the Jets fans, it's about to have their own home now, their own range. And to be able to go in there, check it out, feel it, touch it, it's been really important. So it's been a good result for us.
All right, we've got some other kit-related questions a little bit later, but next question was about Hunter venues. What's happening with the stadium administration? We had about 18 months ago, the pitch was supposed to be fully relayed, but was only enough money found for about half of it. The rest of it was a bit shabby towards the end, and now we've got, obviously, Knights playing on it. And obviously, the ownership or the administration group in charge of Hunter Stadium changed around a couple of times, and it's now, I think, in the state government. So what's happening with the stadium at the moment?
Yeah, so the stadium now, Hunter Venues, is run by communities in New South Wales. We've really had some positive movement with those guys. So in particular, Luke Coleman as general manager of sort of the broader group of communities. So there's three stadiums that form part of it. Our stadium, Parramatta Stadium, and down in Cogra as well. Also Wynn Stadium, mm-hmm. the new one down there. So with that has become a lot of change. Obviously, it hasn't been smooth as we'd all like, but it's certainly gotten much better, and we're really pleased with that. They've just appointed a new general manager who'll be here permanently. So that's a really positive move. They've had a lot of interim staff, which hasn't made it easy. In regards to the pitch, I'm not sure where they're at with their plans, whether they will redevelop it. I know it's a very expensive exercise, so whether they plan and budget that, and obviously being state government, they'll need to go through those appropriate channels and work out where that budget sits. But I think the standard of the ground's been pretty high considering it gets used 24.
Well, we also have to look through a schedule about when they actually can do that to the pitch, and it's difficult with the rugby league season. and the football season, the soccer season, they've got to look at timings when they can actually do it, which is, you know, quite a long process. But something that I think from a football perspective that we look at the pitch a lot more than a rugby league perspective. So it's something that we know needs to happen in the future to get it right.
Well, with the Knights not looking like they're going to make the finals this season, it's could be a nice 2 month window there where they might be able to do something.
That's right.
Not that there's any competition between the codes. We did have a question submitted by Zachary on Twitter, basically asking a question that a lot of people were asking last season: the anthem "Never Tear Us Apart." What's our movement on being able to actually have it played prior to kickoff?
We're still going through the process at the moment with the FFA. Look at the timings. You know, FFA had a song last year that they require from every team to have. It's something with our commercial team that we would sit down, and I know it's dear to the heart of many supporters out there, so it's something that I'll push to make happen. It's got to align with, like I said, the regulations from the FFA timings, and see where we can do it.
Awesome. All right. Are we investigating relationships with any overseas clubs and club networks to be able to tap into overseas talent and also give our players and coaches the potential to experience training and even be able to transfer to other clubs within that network in the off-season?
Definitely. It's something that I know Newcastle's looked at in the past, and it's something that, you know, it's always positives by doing that sort of thing. And we have got a lot of contacts. We've got a lot of contacts in Europe and in Asia, and it's... It's trusting those contacts with either player recruitment and potentially off-season tours as well, which we're looking at. And, you know, it'd be great to have an association with certain clubs in Europe and in Asia, and not just player exchange, but look at potentially some matches as well, bring some teams to Newcastle, which, you know, would be fantastic. We've seen the David Beckham game, the LA Galaxy, when they came out here. It's something that we are definitely looking at, and we'll... remain looking at it in the future.
All right, yeah, because we discussed earlier with Gary Van Egmond about who the talent scouting department, which basically consists of himself and Craig. Is there any plans to look at being able to give him some more support with having some overseas scouting happening? Because obviously that's going to be a little bit difficult for him to do from here.
Definitely Craig and Gary have got their contacts, and, you know, we've got an organisation with a lot of people with football contacts here, so... You know, with all our staff, we can use our contacts and trust people over there. I don't think we would look at having one particular scout, but we would look at, you know, different people we can trust and look at those players, because it's very, very hard to look at, you know, YouTube footage and go, okay, we want that player. So
we've been before by DVDs.
Yeah, we don't want to get on that same track. So it's a situation where, you know, either, you know, the coaching staff can potentially go over there and look at a player, or we get a player over here, which we're looking at as well. So it's, but it's trusting those people and having the right context, which I know we have.
All right. Hunter Ports was the shirt front sponsor for the Jets and Knights, obviously across HSG, for the past seasons. Is this to remain the case for the upcoming season, or is there new commercial agreements to be made?
No, definitely. Hunter Ports are still on board, so all our gear is at production now to ensure that we're delivered on time and ready to go. So, look, Hunter Ports still got a part to play in the community, and we're working really close with their team in delivering that. So they were really happy last year to be on board with both the Jets and the Knights, and I think next season will be a good one for them as well.
Okay, now with our situation a couple of weeks back with the licence crisis, we've just got a couple of questions with regards to that. Is there anything you would like to clarify or set the record straight from the handing back the licence crisis where you believe HSG and or the Jets were misrepresented either in the media or in public opinion?
A lot of times, exactly what you always read in the paper is not always the case, and, you know, regardless, it was a very, very difficult time for the fans, for the players, the staff, you know, all our members out there. I believe we're creating something really special here, and to go through that, it was difficult. And it's a situation where you look back on and you look at what the other CEO and owners are saying at the moment. It's actually, in some strange way, the FFA has actually been a bit more lenient in the sponsors category, and, you know, the grant that potentially could come, the new TV rights deal that is coming. So, you know, in that aspect, it's give the clubs a bit more longevity and made probably the A-League stronger. But from our point of view here in Newcastle, with the supporters not knowing the ins and outs, and, you know, include myself in it, it was very, very difficult. And but I suppose in the end, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And you know, potentially this is going to make us so strong and be the club that we always dreamed to be. And that's the main thing at the moment. We have got a club here. We've got, you know, sensational supporters out there that that want the right thing to happen with the club, and we want to represent the club in the right way, the management here. So, you know, we're looking forward to the season and looking forward to many seasons to come.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it was certainly a really difficult time, you know, and it wasn't a decision that was made lightly, and that's probably one of the, you know, the misconceptions out there, that this was a knee-jerk reaction and that, you know, that Troy Palmer and Nathan had, you know, just decided on a whim, and it certainly wasn't the case at all. It was a very long thought out process. It was the Easter long weekend when we spent the long weekend in the offices discussing what may be the outcomes of this. What is this, the only path we've got left? You know, and that's really what it was. It was that we just couldn't. We'd lost trust with the FFA. The issues that we needed brought to a head, we couldn't bring to a head, and we just, you know, we didn't want to do the game of disservice and head down, you know, other paths where all you do is just carry on until people are fed up with you. And we wanted to see change. We wanted to see positive change. And I think we've certainly achieved that. And you know, whilst the manner, you know, might not have been to everyone's liking, you know, the result with the Joust committee formed, like Rob said, the commercial arrangements have really freed up at the FFA, allowing us to get in there and get more categories and to sell. And that's been very helpful. The insurance matter with Jason's been cleared up. The license fee acquisition was a big issue, that, you know, one man who wanted to save the football team for the region got stung a price that no one else was paying, and that was just unfair. So, you know, it's not about who's got the most money or what have you. It's about what's right. And, you know, unfortunately, that was the path that had to come. But like Rob said, you know, we're absolutely, you know, committed. We're on board. You know, we're always going to stay committed to football in the region. It was just that it wasn't going to be through that path of a team. But, you know, what it showed was how we've been able to galvanise a community in one season. You know, I think last time the Jets weren't faring too well before Nathan, there wasn't too much. But, you know, this time there was rallies at the stadium, and we knew the importance. You know, and we stayed in contact with groups like yourselves and obviously our partners, and, you know, we were always daily updating and where things were at. And, you know, no one wanted to see the Jets go, especially not us, you know, not at HSG. We'd done so much work to get the Jets up and about. The last thing we wanted was that, but it was the last resort. So, you know, all that behind us, we're really, really looking forward to, you know, minimum next 8 years of our license and beyond. Like, this isn't a short term, and like Rob said, we're building something special. We've got a great club, a great coach, a pathway, great commercial partners, and even better membership. And, you know, we're the envy of a lot of clubs out there. You know, make no mistake that, you know, second in A-League for crowds, for membership, we're building, and we're going to be a big, big force.
With a lot of bloodletting, as has been portrayed in the media in recent weeks, is the cost cutting at the Jets to streamline operations and live within our means until the new TV deal comes in? Or is this more public opinion?
This is probably public opinion. We want to do things the right way, you know, and it's a situation where, you know, from different thoughts out there with the young team that we've got, but that's from a coaching and philosophy, what we want to do, what type of system we want to play. So it's the type of players we want to bring here. We don't look at it and go, well, we want a cost cut and we don't want to bring a certain player here. It's the culture we want to do. So from that perspective, there is definitely no cutting costs in those sort of areas. But when you look at to run an A-League club at the moment and in the past, I know that things are changing with the model that we spoke about. And, you know, it's things that you still got to, you know, want to do the right thing for longevity and make sure that you're not going crazy and spending money in areas that is not going to be viable for long term.
Hmm. And that term, you know, that the bloodletting, I think, is a big misrepresentation of what's really taking place. You know, certainly, you know, I can't comment on the football and the players' movements and what have you, but, you know, commercially, we do have to run a business that's viable, and that's the big thing. So, yeah, but we haven't slashed staff, we haven't slashed costs. You know, we want to provide a great environment for our members, for our fans. You know, I can tell you we've got a really hard-working commercial team who isn't over, you know, over numbers or a lot of people in front office. We're a normal-sized team running two clubs, and they work really, really hard, our staff. So, you know, that term bloodletting, I just don't think is accurate at all.
And you'll see probably in the future as well that where we want to push money into, and we want to give every kid in this region, you know, and proud region of football that we've got, a pathway. And you'll see some things that we potentially have got happening in the future where, you know, it's definitely not cutting costs in those areas, because, you know, I was a young boy myself coming through this area, and to have a pathway and the right pathway for these young kids, that's what we want, and we won't cut costs in those areas, definitely.
Cool. Alrighty. Now that the crisis with the licence is obviously over and we're supposedly in the new era of cooperation with the clubs and the FFA, what differences have you guys seen in dealing with the FFA in issues between clubs and the governing body?
Well, the committee that they've formed now with three representatives, you know, that has definitely changed the whole system now going forward, where the clubs in the past, in the last 6 years, probably hadn't really had much of a say, and you've seen how so many different owners came in and out of the league, where I really truly believe that at the moment, with an input from these owners and the clubs, it will keep certain owners around for the long term, which, you know, you look at it, like I say, in the last 6 years, there's been that much cutting and changing from different clubs, and, you know, that's a really important thing, longevity. I know the fans are so important out there, but for these owners to have a say and really, you know, have an input, you know, how they run a club, I think that's imperative. And I can see now how things are working with the FFA, that they want to allow that. They want things to change in the future and make sure these clubs are here for the long run. So I'm excited about the A-League in the future.
Yeah, well, we're certainly... the lines of communication are certainly a lot stronger with, you know, in the commercial world, and I think that, you know, their response too has been really positive, you know, to us, and everyone's moving in a really positive direction. You know, before the draw was announced, the first draft, you know, we were scheduled to open up the season on the Friday night, but just unfortunately with other fixtures, you know, around the other teams, we weren't able to get that. But, you know, what a great sign of trust from the FFA that the Jets are back and to launch the A-League season, I think is a great, you know, testament to where the relationship's at. It would have been easy for everyone to be a little bit cranky in the first 6 months until we iron out the creases, but everyone's hit the ground running and working together, and, you know, we're really confident it's going to be a good year.
Cool. All right. Regardless of who was to blame, the licence crisis, obviously, with the Jets and the FFA was a PR disaster. What plans do the Jets and HSG have to win back the fans who may not want to support the Jets next season?
I think to talk about it is difficult, and words don't always, you know, always solve things, I suppose. You know, actions, and that's what we need to do on the field and off the field. You know, our goal that we always have with the members is, you know, to get them up and get them, you know, have a team to be proud of, get our players out and, you know, get them out in the community as much as possible and do the right things in that way. But like I said, it's words, and, you know, we need to make actions happen, and that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's Robbie's spot on. And, you know, it's already, you know, with our membership prices that were the lowest last season have stayed the lowest this season. You know, we're committed to allowing families to get to the football, but get to the football regularly. So, you know, we're absolutely committed to our membership, our fan base, our region. And I think, you know, like Rob said, you know, we can talk about, you know, the actions are already starting there. It started with our membership campaign, and it'll build before we kick off in October.
Cool. Alrighty. Okay, so moving on, what's the status of the Northern Alliance, which was the partnership between the Jets and the Northern New South Wales Football Federation? Plans, obviously, we talked about last season's podcast, I believe, with developments with a possible academy in partnership. But so far, all we've sort of seen at the moment has been the Jets youth team completing in the local league. What's happening with the Northern Alliance?
Well, it's been a fantastic thing to start with our youth team participating in the NBN competition. We're the only A-League club that's got a youth team that's 12 months a year. So that was the start of it. But in the future, we, you know, it's three components I look at. There's a W-League component, community component, and, you know, elite youth development component to be involved with Northern New South Wales, and they're things that we have been working on in the last 6 months to a year. We're going to keep working on that, and it's to be have a relationship with the with your local association is an important thing, and there is quite a few things that are going to be happening in the next couple of months, and we'll keep you all posted. But the alliance is there. Mm-hmm. David Elan and myself get along very, very well, and we've had countless meetings and try to work out what the not the benefit, just the organisations, but benefit of football in general in local area.
Because obviously Northern had their own crisis last season as well. So did that sort of have any impact on the plans going ahead? But did they have to get shelved for a while and then everything had to start from scratch, or basically it was just everything got picked up where it got left off and things are continuing?
Well, there was a lot of things going on before that, so they did have to get shelved for a while, but they seemed to continue quite well afterwards. And David Elan, he knows how important the brand is, the Jets brand out there, and to get it out there and make sure these, like we talked about before, these young kids have got a pathway to be involved with. So if it is working with Northern New South Wales and it's the right way, we'll make that happen. And it's not just for, like I said, for our organisations, it's for the kids in there and their parents to make sure that we're doing the right thing by them.
Okay, cool. The W League side, the W League Jets side, can you guys explain why the Northern is funding and administering that and not HSG, and why is it not under the HSG banner?
Oh, we had a look at it before, and it's a very, very difficult situation. We're all passionate about women's football in our area, and it's but for a 10-week or a 10-game competition, all the other associations look after their W League team, their local W League team. Last season were the only A League team that totally funded and managed the W League team from the area. So to coincide with the institute programs, most of the W League teams do that. They coincide together. And I've sat down and gone through things with Northern New South Wales, and definitely didn't want that to die. We realise how important women's football is in our region, like we talked about, and it's something that we know we needed to fund and put money into it and make happen. But I just think the management side of things, because of Northern with looking after the institute program, it coincided and worked well together.
Mm. And that's the other point is that the women's team will be still, if you like, will be part of the Newcastle Jets football club. So whilst they're not under the HSG banner, they're certainly part of the club, and that means that they will look like the Jets. Their awards nights will be on the same awards nights as ours. Where it's possible that we can have the female players participate in our kids clinics, we certainly will. Mindful that they're not full time athletes. HSG's contributing a significant amount of money, so it's certainly not that that we've just handed over the paperwork, so to speak, to Northern. There is a significant financial contribution that HSG makes to underwrite a lot of those costs of running the team. So our contribution is certainly still there, and that women's football does have a big part to play, and it'll have a big part to play with the club. It just ties in a lot tighter with that all year round coaching.
Awesome. All right. Now we've got a couple of bunch of questions been submitted by various forum members. First one was from Pico, basically asked, would the club consider having a Members Player of the Year award voted on by all the members that join up, say, before the final third of the season starts? This player award will be presented at the annual Jets Awards night, preferably by a lucky member who voted for them. Personally, I'd like to see it selected from the junior members, as it would give them a kick award, giving an award over to their favourite player. Ideally, this would be expanded to include the player being awarded the member's number 12 for the next season. Should the player leave, the number would be retired for the season until the next member's player is awarded. This would, of course, wait till after Job has retired, as he currently holds the number. I think this would engage members and give another great benefit to being a member, and would help create our own piece of tradition emphasising membership.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. I certainly do. So, we'll go back and take this away to our membership guys and work on the logistics on how it's best. In my previous time with the Sydney Roosters as membership manager, we had this where the members could vote in exactly the same process. They'd present on award night, or sometimes they'd present the last home game of the year if the voting was conclusive. So there's certainly scope to do, and like we said, we're always looking to engage with the memberships. The number 12 is probably a little bit tricky, just given that you know, players wear it. And then, you know, whilst the concept's great, I guess if you have a, you know, a player that, you know, their parents have bought a few jerseys for the kids and they've gone and branded it up, and the next year they're in the number 12. And they're only minor things. But, yeah, the concept's there. I think we can definitely take that back and look into it.
I really like the idea about the junior member as well. That's a fantastic idea. So it's something that, like Jared said, that to our membership team, we will definitely flag with and have a conversation with them about.
Yeah, I mean, our junior members are really important. We did the clinic this year, which was the first time that you know, that's been done. And then what we're also looking at doing is selecting junior members that will walk on the team with the, walk on the field with the team pre-game. So instead of just you know, randomly selecting what have you, that we really do build, because the, you know, the kids are the future of this program. So yeah, I think it's exciting what we can do.
Cool. All right. Pico also asked, with the club adopting the blue and red kit for home and the fact that it won't be changing much, is the club looking at changing the alternate kit more often? Say, change the home kit every 2 to 3 years, but change the alternate kit each year, and the home doesn't change. With Western Sydney now in the competition, the colours are black, white and red. This seems a great chance to change your alternate kit. To pay some respect to the formation of KB United in 97, and next season would be a good chance to recognise the 5th anniversary of Newcastle's maiden championship, all while avoiding clashes.
All good points.
Yeah, absolutely. So we, I know we chatted offline before we started the podcast here about the kits and those ideas. Certainly what we want to do, you know, I guess whilst the Jets are, as a club are in entering season 8, HSG and the new management are sort of only entering season 2, and we've changed over the colours, and what we don't want to do is we don't want to be a club that just constantly, you know, changes and sends you back to the supporter store. So the red and blue is really important to us, and should be, you know, it should stay and get some longevity for the people. And people pay a lot of money for those jerseys, and they should get some value out of them. So we'll certainly look at, I'd say we'd change the away kit before we change the home kit, as in the rotation of how we do it. And, you know, internally we've already started the discussions about the 5th anniversary for round 3. How that works. A lot of it gets gets a little bit tricky just with the quantities that you have to order, and that's being honest about it. So, you know, it's not just ringing up ISC and getting you know, getting a set of jerseys for that game. You know, each player needs 2, and then, you know, you have to order in, you know, minimums of 500-700. So yeah, that's the challenges with that. But the KB United one we've discussed a lot over the last 6 months about that, and how we could, you know, everyone loves KB United, and that's obvious. So it's how that works. Does it still have the same impact if it's not KB? You know, if a ton of ports on the front instead of KB, does it lose its retro feel? Mm-hmm. And we've even gone far. We've had big meetings with CUB who were a partner of the Jets, about, you know, could we get KB, you know, alcohol served on Alcohol Hill for that game to commemorate it. So we're certainly down the path with it. Again, it's about, if we produced that looking strip but it didn't have KB, does it still hold its significance or its memories for people? How do we theme up the day better? Do we do it later in the season as part of Old Boys Day that we do? But again, we're really mindful, we're only 2 years in, and we've you know, just changed the strip so often. So, well, not so often, we've changed it for the start of the season. So we don't want to change often so soon and make people, you know, feel like we're constantly sending them back to the supporter store. So those points are in there, and they're absolutely work in progress. Whether we can see them this year, I can't commit to that. But they're certainly there, and we're definitely already starting planning the celebrations for what we can do for round 3.
Cool. All right. Gary Fish asked 2 questions. First, for HSG, what lessons have you learnt from football, about football, that surprised you?
Is that for me as well?
You would either of you, I suppose.
Football, you never learn everything. Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one, and things are changing all the time. And from my perspective, as a player, well, I was a player before in this role, it's been up and down, you know, and it's a great learning experience for myself. And, you know, I think HSG, it's, you know, for Newcastle, it's been fantastic, you know, for the Knights and the Jets to have an organisation that want to stick by it for, you know, and do the right thing by an organisation and for the fans, it's fantastic. But that's probably for more of a you question, Jared.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm a Victorian who's worked in league for 6 years before I arrived at HSG. So, you know, I've learnt plenty. You know, and I've learnt lots about from you guys, like about the passion that this supporter group has is beyond, you know, anything that I've seen. You know, you self-funded, you drive, you do it all yourselves. You know, we try and help, but you like to do it yourselves. And I think that's been amazing to see that. From a football point of view, I just think the game is special. I think it's unique, and I don't think people really understand how unique it is. And I think it's one of those. It's a sport where the hardest bit's getting them through the turnstile for whatever reason. Maybe not up here because they're, you know, Novocaine's got their own team to identify with. But, you know, once they come through the turnstile, they come back again and again and again, as we've seen with our crowd increase. You know, we've gone up 40%, which is huge. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, with Rob and the team putting out a competitive team on the field and the commercial guys, I think we're going to have another great season of attendances. And, you know, that's been what's surprising that it's a really great day out for families too, just that the swing in the attendance is the group of people that come to watch this. I've also, you know, not just football, but the whole watching Newcastle respond to the model has been interesting. You know, the Knights and the Jets model and the crossover, you know, people who maybe weren't Jets fans or Knights fans, you know, they're one or the other, but now they're coming to a bit of both. The inquiries that we've had for joint memberships, you know, that was always... you know, on the whiteboard on day one when we started the planning, but we never thought we'd be able to, you know, we don't think we'd be able to introduce it just yet because due to the logistics and what have you, but it'll happen. It'll definitely head down that track, and I think, you know, I really think that there's been a lot of breakdown in that, you know, the anti-Jets, anti-Knights people from each of the camp. I think people, and we always said, I don't know if we said it last time officially on the podcast, but internally we always said our goal was to get, you know, that people who went to Jets games not hating the Knights and the Knights not hating the Jets and to look at the paper and or, you know, get online and say, oh, you know, the Jets had a win, that's good, and then maybe go to a game, go to three games and by year four or five they're a member. So I think that's been a great learning and watching from afar.
You're laughing at anything like that? Most of that mudslinging just goes on the Newcastle Herald forums. So, all right. The second question Gary Fish asked was, West Sydney have announced plans to de-eel Parramatta Stadium to make the venue more football. Does HSG plan to make moves towards seeing Hunter Stadium reflect that the ground is shared? Put up a couple of points, perhaps naming the new stand after a footballing identity, Reg Date, Cheryl Salisbury, Ray Bartz, putting up a Champions 2008 fence sign like the Knights Premierships have had posted for some time. Whenever we see a Knights badge, we put a Jets one next to it. Name the hills, maybe KB United Hill. And also MFKS had something similar saying on the same subject, where is the naming of the stand to commemorate Newcastle football heroes?
Yeah, well, I deal a lot with the stadium. I think we do a pretty good job. I don't think it is very Knight-centric. I know that, you know, coming from a season of Knights into our first season of Jets, but I think now that HSG's had its first season of the Knights this season, I'm not sure whether you know, that those people have been at the stadium this season, but I wouldn't say it's a very, you know, especially during the summer, I wouldn't say it's a Knights stadium at all. I think we're very clean. Obviously, our sponsors are the same, so whether people go there and they see the same signs, perhaps that maybe triggers those emotions. The Champions 2008, you know, absolutely, we'll have that up for and that's part of, you know, forming those fifth anniversaries. The Knights one's got taken down this season as part of the rebadging, if you like, of the stadium fascia with our sponsors. So we'll definitely look to bring those back in, and you know, that premiership and should absolutely be, you know, be honoured around the ground. The whole about naming the grandstands, that they're the government stands now, so that'll be their call and their process. You know, I know people say, well, there's the Andrew John stand, but, you know, that was named while the Knights had control of the stadium. So I think they're great points. And whether it's, you know, whether it's someone who's, you know, done their best work on that field, or whether it's a fantastic sporting identity of Newcastle is something to consider as well. So, yeah, that'll be totally up to the state government about, and Hunter Venues, how they brand that.
Any plans on any badges on the Turton Road facing side of the Western Grandstand?
Oh, the new one. Yeah, so we're certainly looking how we... You know, it's a great facade. It's got a lot of space. So whether we can shoot images up there. We've already spoken to the stadium about, you know, we can't permanently fix things on. Those pillars are actually hollow in the middle, so it's not like you can climb to the roof and just throw down a banner for the game. You know, we've looked at those as well. So, yeah, we'd love to jazz it up. I mean, you know, ideally, I think in everyone's mind, we've got that big Friday night game against, you know, whoever it may be, big game. Everyone in Newcastle's excited and they rock up to the ground and there's, you know, Ryan Griffiths beamed up onto our grandstand as you enter. I mean, what a great image to get into, or just our badge. Or so I think, yeah, there's definitely plans to how we jazz that up. And you know, the feel and atmosphere is really important. But it also, it's tough with, we can't permanently fix things and we don't play a lot of pure night football, as in for when people arrive, they're still arriving during the day due to daylight savings. So, yeah, the plans are there.
Cool. All right. Steve136 asks, after months during which the Jets have made many changes, from wiping out the advisory board to releasing most of the Jets' experienced players, replacing them with unknown, unproven, inexperienced, and more importantly, cheaper youngsters, why should Jets fans renew their memberships when it seems as though the Jets' main objective in the off-season has been cost-cutting? We sort of discussed it a little bit.
We discussed that, and it's, you know, and there's been a lot of negativity, you know, blown out there, but, you know, like I said before, we don't look at it as cost-cutting. You know, to bring cheaper young players in. We look at, you know, these players that we have brought in as an organisation, as a club, are players that are future stars. And, you know, they're players that we think will do the business for the club and the town and want to play here and want to be here. And it's not about cutting costs. It's more about, you know, having the right culture here, and that's what we want, and the fans will be proud of it. And, you know, I'm sure... you know, when you see these players in action, you know, there'll be a lot of members out there that want to support for long term, and potentially other members want to get involved with the club. So, you know, it's let's be passionate about it. Let's get behind it and not look at the negatives. That's all I can say.
Mm. I mean, and Jets fans should absolutely renew their membership, and they're going to see a great football team out there. But, you know, all along, you know, I guess over this difficult time is... we've evoked a lot of emotion, a lot of passion, and that's the best way to show your emotion, your passion is a membership and get to the ground and support these young boys and come and say that, you know, I saw James Brown's first game for Newcastle, it was amazing, and now look where he is. You know, I saw Connor Chapman's game there that day. So there's a lot of exciting things about that team, and that's a, you know, the main reason why you should renew your membership is to show your passion through your membership.
Right. And also for the football answer to that question, check out the Gary Van Egmond interview that's posted in a separate podcast as well. All right, Jetmaster asks, will the club consider reintroducing the post-match function? It was very popular with the previous ownership and allowed fans to mingle with the players post-game.
Yeah, this is tough just due to the teams, you know, rehab and what they do. So, you know, as soon as they get off the pitch, they're straight into, you know, hot and cold baths now. You know, dietary has become the biggest thing now. What they eat, how quickly they eat it, the timing. So the probably the days of, I'm not sure what years these took place. You know, I know they used to happen at other clubs. But what you find is by the time the players have done all that, it's an hour and a half or 2 hour gap. And then who would people hang around that long? So that's one of the reasons. The other reason, if you're doing it at the grandstand, we've got licensing restrictions where the license you know, closes, I think it's 60 minutes or 40 to 60 minutes following the full time of the game. So there's another thing where, you know, players wouldn't be able to enjoy a drink with our fans. So what we've tried to do is replace them with more member days. You know, member days, our season launches, you know, even our kids' clinics and you know, try and give more interaction through those forms.
It's something that the players want to do as well, more is mingle with the fans, and we've talked about as well. But like Jared mentioned, it's a difficult one after games. It's a difficult one about now recovering what they go through, but it's something that the fans want to see them as well. And we last season, we want to do it more this season. It's particular groups, bring them in as well after the games. You know, if it's kids, if it's, you know, an organisation, whatever, bring them in. It's just a fine line now, you know, with the coaching, with what they require after the match to do that. But like Jared said, in the season, we want to try to organise more fan days and for the fans to mingle with the players. And you know, like we said, we've got a new bunch of players here, so we want to get them out there and want to get them known in the community.
Just on the, I know it's different to about post-match, but just touching on the community. So HSG's appointed a new general manager of community, Wendy Carmichael. So Wendy's whole job is you know, really structuring how much our guys are out in the community, making sure they are out more than what they, you know, perhaps should be or they were, and then quantifying that. And, you know, I think by the end of the season, to see the work that our guys will do out there, you know, in schools, you know, fan days, etc., is going to be, it'll be quite an achievement. And I look forward to seeing it at the end of the season, what the guys have, you know, racked up. So whilst, you know, one visit 1 week may not be a lot, by the time you add it all up, the actual hours that our guys will spend out in the community, which is really important, where they need to be, and they understand that, is going to be significant.
All right. PV4 asks a couple of questions as well. Are the plans to play feature friendly matches against Real Madrid, Barcelona, Arsenal, Man U, still in the works, and when will these be happening? Also, what time of year actually suits to play these matches, seeing as though our season starts then finishes during theirs?
That's a difficult one as well, like with that season crossover in Europe, and there's a lot of teams now going to Asia, and that's what we've, you know, inquired about and looking into, and you know, it's something that we've talked about last time in the podcast. It's something that, you know, the club wants to do, have affiliation with clubs overseas and make sure we bring, you know, top players and top clubs to Newcastle and play. It's just, you know, trying to find the right club at the right time, and also look at where they are around the world and what we can do. But it's something that we are definitely passionate about and want to look into.
Okay. Last season's podcast, Jared and Robbie said that a fan-designed jersey is a thing they would look into, but not for last season due to IC having the time constraints making the kits. When can we expect to have the ability to have input into jersey design? When are we going to see some emerald and cinnamon in our kits? This was also supported by Q Money.
So probably, yeah, it goes back to that point before. So we certainly, you know, that idea of whether it's next time's away strip, is it a third alternate one we bring in? Do we do a replica of KB United? Do we do a replica, you know, for you know, the fifth anniversary? Do we throw up to the fans and say, you know, come up with your most creative one and the winner? So there's lots of different ways you can do it. I think, you know, ultimately what we're saying is that we need to consolidate. We need to be fair to the fans who have purchased their current ones, and we need to look at, you know, what that third one looks like. We'll certainly, you know, we'll listen, we'll consult, you know, what we change to, you know, but yeah, it won't be this year that we throw it to the fans to design one. And I think, you know, the point up top about you know, honouring this year or the KB seems the most popular ones before we start designing our own.
All right, and also the last two questions from PV4. Will our keepers be wearing yellow jerseys, i.e. the same colours as our main rivals, next season as they did this season?
They'll definitely not wear the yellow jersey when we play against Central Coast, but the jerseys, you know, you don't get many options with it, and the options that you do get, you can't let them clash with another club. But I know we did wear the yellow jersey, but it definitely wasn't against Central Coast last year because, like you said, it clashes with it. But it's, you know, it's something that we're restricted in, and something that we put in requests as well at the beginning of the season, what colours we'd like to wear. But there's not much to choose with. So that was the problem that we have to face with it.
As long as it's any colour other than yellow. What is the status in regards to the HSG owner-built club for fans to drink at pre-game and during away games? If I recall correctly, there was talk of something like this in the podcast last season.
Yeah, I think that point is probably more about, I think we discussed, you know, the vision of where we'd like to end up, where we could. So, you know, there certainly has been an advancement. You know, we've got a 100 venues who are, you know, onto their third general manager since we last spoke. So hopefully now with a little bit of, you know, that they become settled, that things make a little bit easier. I think, you know, if everyone closed their eyes and looked how that stadium looks in 10 years, I think everyone would love it, you know. But can the land be freed up? Are you allowed to build, you know? But I think, you know, that's the future. But, you know, it's definitely a long way away. But certainly a place we'd like to end up.
All right. The last question with the addition. Jetapool asks, does the club intend to reintroduce youth league games at Hunter Stadium on match days to offer fans who want greater value for their money to attend? MFKS added, should at least play a couple pre-A League as curtain raisers, plus a couple of W League games as curtain raisers throughout the season. Don't need to play all of them, but put a few on so people outside of the diehards can see the standards.
It's definitely something that we requested last year, and it's difficult around the draw as well, and the regulations that the FFA got for the timings for games. But we did have one game there last year for the youth team, and it was fantastic. So, you know, we'll put in our requests again and push to have more games there at the stadium, because I think not just for the fans, which is, you know, very, very important, but for the players themselves, those young kids, to get a chance to go out there on the main pitch where the older players go, it's just fantastic for them. So, you know, it's something that it's probably got to coincide with our draw, the A-League draw, because it's always separate with the NYL draw, but it's something that I know we requested last year, and we're going to request it again this year.
Yeah, and look, there's just so many. It's not that the club doesn't want to, or you know, obviously it is an expensive exercise to open up a ground, but that's not the sole reason. There's just so many things that have to align. Like Rob said, the draw is the main one. You know, if we're playing on a Friday night, to have the youth league or the women's league playing beforehand, they may be working, they may be at school. The fact is, we could be opening at 3 o'clock and no one's able to get to the game. So that's a real issue. You know, the week that it sits perfectly on a Saturday afternoon, the team could be away. So there's lots of things that go into it. So it's certainly not just we've put a line through and said no. And the big thing is also that timing issue by the FFA. To ask our members to come and watch the youth or the W League and then sit there and watch the grass for 60 minutes is a long time. And you know, but the point of value for money, I'd ask where there's better value. At the moment, our memberships, you know, family memberships are $5 per person per game. And I think, you'd struggle to find any better value than that.
Yeah, that comment was made in the forums after that question was submitted.
Oh, okay.
All right, well, we thank all the supporters for getting online and posting the questions up. I thank Jared and Robbie for giving their time. And I also thank Timmy for sitting in the corner quietly giggling. All right, thanks very much, and stay tuned for the next one. Thank you.